Mark and Delia Owens went to Africa as young graduate students in 1972. Their plan, to study its disappearing animals, the brown hyena, the lion. They didn't know they'd stay in Africa for the next 23 years. They didn't know then how political zoology work could be. But when they moved to the northern Luanga Valley in Zambia, ivory poachers were killing savanna elephants by the thousands. So they stayed to stop the slaughter by helping villagers find better alternatives in agriculture and education. And they tell their story in their new book, Secrets of the Savannah, 23 Years in the African Wilderness, Unraveling the Mysteries of Elephants and People. Mark and Delia, thanks so much for being here.
Great to be here, Steve.
Thanks for having us.
So here you are in Africa, Delia, to study lions. What's the moment that you decide it's all about elephants?
We were putting mud up on our little mud and wattle hut. It was going to be our first house in Africa. It had thatch roof, and it was just some logs with mud on it. And gunfire broke out all around camp. In fact, the gunfire was so close, Mark grabbed me and pulled me behind a tree. We thought people were shooting at us. And in fact, they were killing elephants, and we found some dead elephants near our camp. And we decided at that very moment that we would postpone the lion study and try to stop the poaching of the elephants.
Take us back in history, though, a little bit on the story. How did you stop that poaching, Mark?
Well, the first thing we tried to do was motivate the local game scouts. There were only 7 game scouts to protect an area 1.5 times the size of Delaware. They were dressed in rags. They had no weapons. They hadn't been paid in 8 months. And so what we tried to do is motivate them with equipment. We thought at first that might just do it.
It didn't do it.
Not even close. What we had to do in the end was supplant an entire illegitimate economy based on poaching with a legitimate economy where villagers were improving their agriculture, starting small businesses like fish farms, poultry units, little vegetable gardens, and so forth. And also, we gave them jobs. We basically replaced the meat they were getting from poaching and the cash they were getting from poaching with all these little enterprises.
Now, this is amazing to me. You guys go in, you identify the poachers, and instead of trying to put them in jail, you give them jobs?
Well, yes, because, I mean, poaching was profoundly decimating to the wildlife and also to the people who were enslaved to work for the poachers for a lump of meat. And they paid a shooter. They'd hire a shooter and pay him $10 to kill an elephant. So it was a very degrading, corrupting influence on the village communities.
Now, your book is also about the importance of family and how elephants are really challenged when their natal groups are taken apart. There was one in particular who really stands out in this book. Her name is Gift. What was so extraordinary about her?
Gift appeared on the beach across from our river one day when we were in camp, and she was only 5 years old. She was an orphan. The rest of her family unit had been shot. There were, in fact, quite a few orphans in North Luangwa, but she was the first to actually come into our camp. Gift had a little jig that she would dance if we got too close to her. She would run towards us and flap her ears, and then she would stop, and then she would run in the opposite direction and jig. It was so funny. But she was very, very special because she stayed around our camp for many years. And then when she was 8.5 years old, she had a calf. And she was the first one who showed us that the very young females were breeding. Because before poaching, the elephants would not have their first calf until they were 16 years old. She was 8.5 and had an infant. We named the infant Georgia.
So she would have gotten pregnant at 6 because it takes
That's
2 years.
Right.
Exactly.
That's right.
To gestate an elephant.
The age of first ovulation in elephants had been cut in half. So this was the trick that the elephants had up their trunks to recover.
You're in a ridiculously dangerous place. At what point did the danger seem overwhelming?
I think the worst time for me, really, well, for both of us, was when we had a favorite elephant who became more or less our mascot in the war against poaching. His name was Survivor. Survivor was the first to accept us, and he began coming into our camp and hanging around a lot, and we really became, we got to know him, and I could do this little ritual dance. I would hold my arm up full stretch and reach out my fingers, and he would arch his trunk over and smell my fingertips, and we'd sort of turn around each other in sort of a ritual dance in camp. And this, anyway, he was shot one day by a very bad guy with a group of about 40 men who came to kill us and the elephants. And at that point, I decided we had to escalate the war against poachers. And I did that by shooting firecrackers at them.
shooting firecrackers at them.
Yes, it was. The firecrackers were harmless, but the poachers didn't realize that. It scared them. They thought they were hand grenades or something.
By the way, when you're bombing these poachers with firecrackers, they shoot back at you?
Very definitely. They were shooting AK-47s at me. When I was flying at night, I could see tracers streaking past the wings at times. And they came to camp, as I think I said, three different times, at least three, to assassinate us. And we, fortunately, the village people who were on our side by this stage warned us in every case. But what worried me the most was three poachers were trying, the major poaching figures were trying to get a shoulder-fired missile from corrupt elements of the army to shoot me down. So that's why I had to come up with something that made us look, you know, less like a soft target. But I didn't just shoot the firecrackers. At the same time, I started rumors that these were actually rocket-propelled grenades instead of firecrackers. It was a big bluff.
And believe it or not, this was what really cleared the park out. Finally, after everything we tried, these firecrackers chased the poachers out of the park, and the poaching stopped dramatically. And that's when it became dangerous. Really dangerous for us when we succeeded. When the poaching stopped, the ivory dealers were put out of business, and some very high-level officials were making money off of ivory. So they were then determined to stop us, and they tried a lot of different ways.
Through all these difficult times, how do you keep a marriage together?
It was not easy. I thought that Mark was taking too many risks. I mean, we wanted to solve the problem, but it became so dangerous, and it was too much for me. And so I actually moved out and built a smaller camp on the Luangwa River about 40 miles from our camp. Not 40 miles, but that's a day's trip in the bush. And I think that's what helped, because it put some distance between us, and I didn't have to know when he was going out at night and everything. And actually, I think every woman should have her own camp. It was wonderful. Mark would come out for the weekends, and we'd sit and watch the elephants and the hippos, and we were able to find some peace again.
Tell me, is it possible to save elephants without saving people?
No. No. Absolutely not. If you think about human communities and wildlife communities juxtaposed, throughout eons of time, they have always been interdependent. What we did in the North Luangwa was raise the standard of living not only for the wild animals, but for the people, so that eventually when they reached a parity, we could reassemble those ancient synergistic bonds between the two communities that had always existed.
It ended so well. That's what makes us happy, is that after all this chaos and all these dangers, we never dreamed that it would actually end well.
Well, what saved the project in the end, Steve, was that it was the local people, really, who saved the project. They simply would not let the corrupt elements of the government prevail. They were seeing so many benefits and had such an improved lifestyle and living standard that they and their chiefs basically stood up and simply refused to accept that project was finished. And it continues today. This is our 20th anniversary, and it's totally run by Zambians now. North Luangwa National Park is the most secure park in Zambia and probably in Africa.
So I have to say, guys, if I simply met you walking down the street or at the library or at a friend's house over dinner, I'm not sure I would see that you are so fearless and unstoppable as obviously you are. What's your secret? What is it that drives you?
We didn't know what we were getting into when we went over there. We took it one day at a time, and when things got so dangerous, we talked about quitting a lot. We really did. I'd say every other day we seriously ask ourselves, why are we still here? And then an elephant would walk into camp. An elephant would stand 5 yards from us and look at us in the eye. And these people started depending on us, and the little children needed us, and we could see a little taste of success coming along, and we could not leave. We could not turn our backs on those people or the elephants who were depending on us.
Mark and Delia Owens' new book is called Secrets of the Savannah. Thanks so much for coming in today.
Thanks for having us, Steve.
Thank you, Steve.
It's been a pleasure.